Blog Talk Radio.
Tracy?
Hi, Bill.
Are you going to start the show?
I'm sitting here looking at a picture of Barack Obama, and I'm thinking, wow, now I get it. All those Republicans in Congress and the Senate. Isn't he amazing?
Wow.
We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Now, there's some passion.
The more I watch people in the last 10, 15 days talking Obama, you just got to wonder, is it the Messiah? Come on. The Republicans are rolling over and, you know, like a puppy wanting to have its tummy scratched, you know.
Actually, I've got a little bit different vision of that because we've got kind of a about a 6 month old pup, and they you chastise them and they immediately lay down, roll over, lift up their leg, and then pee all over themselves.
Well, mine doesn't do that, and he's only about 5 months old.
Oh yeah.
But if I yell at him to move, he will lay down and spread legs and,
yep,
you know, sit there like, oh. You know, come on. The Republican Party is doing exactly the same thing. It's rolling over and saying, please scratch me.
Yep.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Yep. Yep. And you know, it really is a shame because at one time they had a really good platform. And they stood by their principles.
Principles? Principles? Are you speaking about principles?
Well, I said used to.
Do not speak about principles. Because, you know, damn it, we have to, you know, work with him. Forget the principles. We have to work with him.
Oh, I guess the last 8 years conditioned me to dissent was the highest form of patriotism. I'm confused. I'm sorry.
Dissent? No dissent. No dissent allowed.
I see.
I heard something over the weekend that disturbed me greatly.
Hmm.
Apparently, the press corps do not raise their hands to ask Obama questions. Did you
really
hear this? Yes, they don't do that because every day there's a list of who will be allowed to ask questions.
Oh, my God.
So it's not even a matter of you can just ask. You have to be allowed to ask. And, of course, the question begs itself. Do they get to ask the questions they want, or are the questions given to them?
Hmm. If it's already scripted, my vote goes for the latter.
I would suggest to you that if the press corps is going to roll over, spread its legs, and ask to be scratched along its tummy, and the rhinos are going to roll over and lift their legs and ask to be scratched on their tummy, you know, who's actually going to be the alpha dog here?
Exactly. And worse yet, who's going to hold them accountable?
I don't know, but I watched a little bit of Hillary's confirmation hearings today.
Mm-hmm.
And she's either really, really smart or very well coached.
Maybe a combination of both of them.
You know, she was well informed, and just about everybody that spoke seemed to be thinking that she was, you know, God's gift to the State Department.
Right.
And that, you know, Barack Obama could not have picked a better person to be in the State Department than Hillary Clinton. And frankly, you know, I just keep wondering, why would Hillary do it? And
you know, that really is a puzzle. That's a puzzle. I still haven't come to any conclusions in my own mind yet.
And then I started thinking.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I started thinking about something that I'd read a long time ago about a very charismatic person. And every time somebody came into his presence, they were just so wowed, so awestruck, so enraptured by his presence and his ability to speak that they just about forgot everything that was wrong about this person and thought he was just the most wonderful thing in the world, and why doesn't everybody else feel the same way? The first name of that character was Nicholas. I might get a lot of heat from people by even suggesting, but I'm not suggesting that he is. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, tough, you're going to go have to find out yourself. I'm not suggesting he is Nicholas. I'm just suggesting that there is an awful lot of people, and I've said this before about the State Department, that when they go into the State Department, they don't come out the same way. They're like pod people. You know, the State Department is a pod place. You go in with a brain, you come out speaking State Department ease, and nothing else seems to function in your brain. I keep getting this idea that people go in front of Barack Obama and they come out going, wow! And frankly, all I can think about is Howard Dean. Ah!
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of comments out in the chat rooms and blogosphere about President-elect Obama's prowess as a speaker. And there is some talk that he uses in his voice, in his pauses, in his voice inflections, and in his body movements, that acts almost as if he were hypnotizing the people that he was speaking to. Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't know that that's possible. I have never experienced that myself in listening to any speaker. But I can tell you that talk is certainly out there. And they quote sources in terms of the plausibility of that scenario.
I have heard some pretty damn good speakers in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And in person. And I would suggest to you that really good speakers have that ability to get people caught up in not what they're saying, but how they're saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask people that go, that was a great speech, to, and I'm not talking about people that, you know, the pundits that listen to speeches and stuff like that, where
mm-hmm.
they're writing down notes all day long. I'm talking about people that just listen to the speech.
Right.
In those situations, you ask somebody, can you name anything that they said? Just repeat one phrase, one idea that they said.
Mm-hmm.
And they will look at you with this blank face, and most of them will cover it with, you weren't paying attention?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
And you sit there and kind of go, yeah, I was, but apparently you weren't.
Exactly.
And, of course, a lot of people have suggested that that is, in fact, Barack Obama's ability, is you spend 20 minutes listening to him and you are amazed at what he said.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much what, it's how. And if you ask people what he said, they won't be able to tell you.
They can't tell you. Actually, he has a commonality with actors and actresses in that regard. Actors and actresses within their milieu, that's what they do. They cause you to suspend your disbelief.
Let
he does that
you,
very well in person.
Yeah, I attended a church in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the rector of the church was an amazing sermon giver.
Uh-huh.
And she had that ability to speak in a way that just kept you interested in what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
My father, who is not a big religious person, on the event of CJ's baptism,
mm-hmm.
attended the church, and he said, now this is from a guy that hadn't gone to church for all practical purposes for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
said that if he lived closer, he'd go to listen to her.
Wow.
Now, as amazing as she was, I, of course, being agnostic,
mm-hmm.
was unmoved by what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very much interested in how she said it.
Mm-hmm.
I bring this up not to talk about her and what she was saying, but to talk about a guy that substituted for her one day. And he read the gospel reading for that day without reading it. He had memorized it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a short gospel reading. It was a fairly long gospel reading.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very theatrical about it,
mm-hmm.
in what he was doing, along the lines of how she gives sermons. People were amazed that he remembered it. But no one could remember what he said. Just that he managed to do the entire reading without reading it.
Mm-hmm.
This whole idea that Barack Obama lacks substance has gotten plenty of play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we are missing a certain point. That point being that despite our arguments that he lacks substance,
mm-hmm.
he is saying things in a way that are getting people either interested in the process again, people voting, or on his side, whatever that side may be. And when we dismiss it as empty oratory,
mm-hmm.
people are dismissing our dismissal because that's not what's happening to them.
Sure. They were moved by it.
They're getting something out of it,
exactly.
And our dismissing it as empty is, they're going, that's ridiculous.
Exactly. Because they have invested themselves in that.
Right. But it also works in the following way. Today, I was listening to Rush's show, and Rush wasn't there, so whatever this guy's name was, he was talking about the attempt to allow bankruptcy judges to cram down mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, or maybe not, most people don't necessarily know, Victoria is a bankruptcy attorney, consumer bankruptcy attorney. I've worked with her for many years. I actually know quite a bit about the bankruptcy law that went into effect in 2005. And he was talking out the side of his head about this bankruptcy law and what a bad idea this cram down is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not 100% certain, and I'm certain I can catch hell from some bankruptcy attorney out there, because I did not stay at Holiday Inn Express yesterday. So I might be talking out the side of my head here.
Okay.
There is virtually no contract that a bankruptcy court judge cannot void or modify, with the exception of one.
Taxes.
Primary residence first mortgage.
Oh, really?
He can void union contracts.
Yep.
He can void pension contracts.
Yep.
He can void sales contracts. He can void purchase contracts. He can void damn near any contract that anybody has entered into except primary residence, first mortgages.
Hmm.
Now, why, in the huge scheme of things, of all of the possible contracts available in today's economy, would that one be singled out for not being allowed to be modified?
Think there might have been a lobbyist at play there?
Might have been a lobbyist in play, but the other part of that is, why would you want to have a mortgage contract modifiable? You were in the banking industry.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you think that a contract that you have, you would want it to be modified in some way?
Well, and given the present circumstances, I could certainly see that. If it was a choice of having to either, one, carry that as a over 90-day delinquent, or having to foreclose and carrying that under the REO, the other real estate owned, I think I would much rather have somebody tell me, okay, you have to modify this contract, we're going to put the interest rate at this, and we're going to put the maturity date at this, and here's what the monthly payments are. Because that makes it then a conforming loan, which means that I don't have to account for it, set aside loan loss reserves, et cetera, et cetera. That's under the present circumstances.
Right. And the argument that is being made by people on the side of mortgage cramdowns,
mm-hmm.
is that the underlying asset no longer has the value that everybody agreed it had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The two options are, let the mortgage company foreclose, take the asset and attempt to sell it at whatever the market might bear at that point.
Yes.
In which case, everyone would suggest it's going to take a loss.
Yes.
Maybe not a big loss, but it could take a pretty good haircut, especially in today's market.
Yes, they could.
The bad side to that for both the mortgage lender and for the communities that the foreclosure is happening is that that will set the bar for many other real estate transactions.
Yes, it does.
Further lowering the bar for other real estate.
Yes.
So it's something that you should be trying to avoid. If a judge can go in there and say, this $300,000 house is now worth only $250,000, and with this little bit of modification, you can have a property that continues to be, as you suggest, conforming, operating, payments being made on it, and it doesn't have an impact on the community, because the foreclosure doesn't actually happen, nor do you have to worry about the sale. Those are all beneficial things.
Yes.
Especially from a banker's point of view, who has a lot of other mortgages.
Yes.
Now, if you only have one mortgage as a lender, you're probably going to be pretty teed off to get that one screwed up by a
yeah.
bankruptcy judge. But
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Other part is, and one of the things that people made a lot of arguments about in 2004 when this law was being promoted, was they wanted less people filing easy bankruptcies.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted people to repay debts. Well, what better way to repay a debt than to keep them in the house making mortgage payments?
Yes.
So it makes more sense to me.
Yep.
The other thing that he said in this radio show this afternoon is something that has bothered me quite a bit. Now, I've had a conversation with a friend who is in Ohio. We've argued this now for 2 years.
Oh, boy. Okay.
About the idea that the Democrats or the media were talking down the economy, and that's why the economy tanked.
Well, that's partly.
I don't think it
partly.
Was any.
Yeah, nah, you and I are going to disagree on that one, then.
That's fine. And
yeah.
I'll actually let you give me a good what for in a moment.
Okay.
Housing prices have been going up dramatically for the last several years.
Yes, they have.
In many places, it was simply gotten to the point where anybody that was paying any attention at all knew that it had to end soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just couldn't have housing prices going up 5 and 6 and 7% a month and hope to keep somebody able to buying it.
That's
eventually
right.
It would be priced out of there, and once that happened, the market would have to retrench.
Yes.
Or wait until the rest of the economy caught up with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of this movie. It's interesting because it's fun to watch, not because of the actual thing going on it. The Day After, which is Dennis Quaid's The End of the World Global Warming.
Oh, okay. Yep, I haven't seen it, but yeah.
You know, he argues that global warming is going to institute the next ice age. Okay.
I think it may have started that already, but go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things that he said was the reason you have storms is because you have instability in the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and a storm realigns things so you get stability back. Now,
okay.
I actually think that you have storms because there's instability. Well, that's the same thing. I'm thinking about it differently, but the point is, storms correct the instability. That's kind of what a recession does to the economy. Things get out of whack. We have a recession. Everything gets to reset. We start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that what's going on in the housing market?
Absolutely.
Certain amount of recession, certain amount of instability causing a storm. If the government tries to interfere and prevent the instability, the storm from resetting things, then we don't get the benefit of a recession,
mm-hmm.
if there can be said such a thing. We get a recession that gets dragged out because the problem doesn't get fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the problem that has to be fixed is asset valuation. Most of the assets that underlie most of the debt that's out there that everybody's scared to death about, no one knows how much it's worth.
Absolutely. And that is one of the factors in the media trashing the economies. People are afraid at this point. And that translates into, looks like we still have a lot more pain in front of us. I don't think I'm going to buy that, whatever, be it a house, a car, a whatever. I think I'm going to hang on to what I have just in case.
Wouldn't you suggest that that is a rational response?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's an absolutely rational response to somebody crying gloom and doom.
We have a caller. Let's,
excellent.
Let's see who it is and jump on in. Caller, what's your name?
Rick.
Hey, Rick!
Rick, how are you tonight?
Doing well. How are you, Bill?
I am well, thank you. A little chilly, but well.
Yeah, it's a little chilly here, too, about 27.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait a second. Rick, you said it's 27 where you're at?
Right, yes.
Bill, what temperature is it where you're at?
The temperature right now is 39.5 degrees on my front porch.
It's minus 7 here.
Yeah, but I am outside.
When you need him.
Minus
I am
seven.
Outside, though, so.
Yeah,
29 is very cold when you're outside.
Two weeks ago, you called in, and the wind was howling so bad we could barely hear.
Yes, that's true. I'm sorry about that. I can't control the weather.
Yeah.
Rick, what's going on? What's up?
Oh, nothing. Just listening in.
All right.
Seeing what's going on in the world.
All right. So, Bill,
let's
go on to this general idea.
Yes.
Go ahead. Tell me why. Okay. Maybe you've already said it. Why is this an economy that has been talked down beyond this initial idea? Because the economy didn't go down by what you're suggesting is people have responded to that.
Well, yes, they respond to that. But then, but you have to look at the timeline. All the way through September, all of the comments about the economy were mild. They were, well, yeah, we've hit a little rough patch. Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a recession. And, you know, that was about the extent of it. Yes, there was some reporting on house values. And, yes, people were aware that they were going down, but there was no panic on it. In October, that changed. In October, and my personal opinion is that was a campaign-started narrative that the mainstream media picked up on that said, oh, my God, the sky is falling. We have this huge meltdown. We had that talked about to the point that one of the campaigners suspended his campaign to go back to Washington to try to solve the situation, either not realizing or was playing his own campaign playbook that said, gosh, if I do that, maybe I can pick up more votes. Without a
chance.
Well,
he could have picked up more votes if he actually voted against it.
Well, yes, he could have. But without realizing or not caring that there was absolutely nothing that Congress could do about that. There was no amount of money that they could shovel into it. There was no amount of regulation that they could pass that would affect it. There were no executive orders that could be issued that would stop it. We are in a recession. We have had them before. I've lived through a number of them. They aren't fun, but if you leave the market alone, it corrects itself. You use the analogy of a storm, and the storm is caused by instability, and then it, because of the storm, that relieves that instability and brings stability back to the system. I think of it more like earthquakes. Earthquakes, small ones, relieve pressure on faults so that you don't get a huge one. That works for a while, but eventually you get a big one anyway. Doesn't matter how many small ones you had up to that point in time, the big one comes. The economy is exactly the same way. It will roll along fine. You'll have mild recessions. You'll have GDP that goes down for a couple of quarters. They last anywhere from 5 months to maybe 18 months. That's on the kind of the long end. And then it settles back down again. But there is always the chance that you're going to have the big one. Anybody remember Red Fox? Oh, it's the big one, Martha, right? And then you have a severe recession, maybe even a depression. But the point is, if you leave the economy alone, it will correct itself. And then you rebuild from that base.
In the big scheme of things, it really makes no difference whether I think it was talked into or whether it was something that was bound to happen by the natural functioning of our economy.
Yes.
I think we both agree that there's nothing that government can do that can fix it.
But they can sure do things that hurt it.
Yeah, because what's broken is not something that's fixable.
Right.
The point of this, what was bothering me today, is the idea that when you argue a position that on its face has something that is false,
yes,
either the statement or a premise.
Yes.
Regardless of the value of the rest of your argument, you've lost.
Yes.
His argument on that show today was lost to me because his premise was wrong. It's a premise that exists, and it is what the Republicans, and in many regards, conservatives have been doing with Obama that I think most people are beginning to dismiss them. The idea is Republicans have to work with the new president. And their arguments for doing so is based on the idea that it's just honorable to do so. It would be the same, and this is exactly how I took it, it would be the same as conservatives turning to Israel saying, you know, you have to talk to your enemies, otherwise you're just going to keep shooting at each other. That argument fails on its face because the premise is wrong.
Exactly.
For the Republicans, the rhinos, the conservatives that say we have to work with Obama because it's the honorable thing to do, the premise is wrong.
Exactly.
That is not a principled position.
No, it isn't.
Obama wants to do things that are absolutely bad for this country, absolutely opposed to any principle that conservatives and hopefully some Republicans would hold dear.
Yes.
Why the hell would you want to work with him? When he wants to do something, Israel, you should work with Hamas because that's the right thing to do. Bullshit, shoot him!
Exactly.
Hello, Mr. Republican. You know, you shouldn't be trying to work with Obama. He wants to put you out of business.
That's exactly right. And And the bad part of that is, I don't think the leadership of that Republican Party, and for our listeners, I think one of the things you have to understand is, I don't think any of us here on this radio show equate Republicans with conservatives.
No.
There may be conservatives in the Republican Party, but the Republican Party is not a conservative party. So when we talk about principles to uphold, I think that goes over the head and falls on a deaf ear of the Republican Party leadership.
I have not seen any principled positions from Republicans, specifically in the leadership positions, for as long as I've been part of this party. Which is to suggest, as long as I've really been paying attention,
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any principled positions.
I would throw Mike Pence's name out there as a principled conservative. But Lord,
but he's
you're
not
talking
the leadership.
No, well, he's I think number three at this point in there, and that was grudgingly given to him. But the point is, he's one out of what, 41? I mean, okay, big deal.
Right. You know, I am suggesting that as long as the argument from the right lacks principle, it is an argument that is lost on the premise.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that was one of President Reagan's greatest strengths, was that he had principles that he upheld, and he would not bend them. Would he compromise on legislation? Absolutely. If you don't get anything passed. But on the principles that he held fast to them. And I think that any conservative that holds fast to the principles is an electable person. I think the American public hungers for that message, and they aren't getting it.
Well, I in my notes for tonight, the first part I had the adulation of the one.
Oh, yeah.
To get things started out. But the title that I put in that bullet point was Awe and Shock.
Yes.
Because I believe most of the people that support Obama have been awestruck.
Yes.
And when he becomes president, I think they're going to be shocked.
I know they're going to be shocked. I was having a conversation today. And I asked the question, has anybody compiled the list of Obama's campaign promises? I mean, we all know some of them, but I don't know that anybody sat down and said, okay, that's a campaign promise, write it down. I mean, we all know about, he's going to give tax relief to 95% of the American people. We all heard that. We all heard that he was going to give a tax credit to those people who created jobs. We all heard that. And on and on and on. He was going to go close Gitmo upon taking office. All of these promises. And as I go through the ones that I remember, he has disavowed every one of them that I remember.
Here's,
he's not going to close Gitmo immediately, said today.
Think about this. I'm Gitmo alone. Think about this for a second.
Yeah.
He said he was going to close Gitmo.
Yep.
Okay. Now, as he's approaching his inauguration, he's backed away from that.
Yes, he has.
And we have confirmation hearings going on in the Senate for his cabinet positions.
Yes, we do.
Which, by the way, we've talked about this, but I can't find the answer to this. Is it normal for confirmation hearings to begin for cabinet positions before the president is sworn in?
You know, I hope somebody out there in our listening audience knows the answer to that question, because I will tell you, I remember from JFK's inauguration on. Actually, I remember Eisenhower's too, but I don't recall that any president got their selectees before any subcommittees prior to the time that they were inaugurated. I'm not saying absolutely it never happened. I'm just saying I sure don't remember it if it did.
Think about this. What happens if... Now, the odds of Hillary getting her confirmation prior to Tuesday, I don't know. I mean, she went through things pretty quick today.
Yeah, she did.
Although she was out there for a very long time, I didn't hear anybody giving her actually any hard grief about anything.
There were a couple of questions about her connection with Bill's foundation and the donors to that, but nothing serious.
Campaign stuff, and nobody in their right mind wants to dig up those cuddle
worms. That's right.
So they're not going to push that. I heard Feingold say, I got some questions about the foundation, but I'm just going to put those into the record. So he wasn't actually going to ask her of them. They're just going to be there. Yay, Russ. There's my senator for you.
Oh, boy.
Asking all the tough questions, not expecting
you
any
betcha.
Answers, but, you know, asking the tough questions. What happens if, let's pretend for a second that there's a vote on Hillary on Monday. She gets confirmed as Secretary of State before Obama gets to be president.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I'm not suggesting anything bad or nefarious here, except for Obama gets sworn in, does all the fancy stuff, shows up at the Oval Office, and closes Gitmo.
Okay.
Who's the one cabinet member that you probably want to be asking some serious questions about that?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Hillary's the gal.
A certain Mr. Gates, who doesn't have to go through confirmation hearings.
Right now, yeah.
And then the second most important person would be the Secretary of State. Start with defense, then go to state. Because the Secretary of State's going to have to tell us what we're going to do with those people that are in Gitmo.
Yeah.
Are they going to be sent back to their countries, or are they going to be brought onto U.S. soil? Now, Gates should answer that, or maybe Hillary should answer that. I started to think about what are the possibilities that Barack Obama has been moving to the center while all this transition stuff was going on, never intending to actually lead from the center, but disarming the Republicans and conservatives in the transition process and then jumping in both feet with his agenda as stated on the campaign trail. Not as during the transition, but actually that, in other words, he actually will, be a president as he suggested he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nightmare.
Yeah. That's an interesting scenario, Tracy. I wouldn't discount it just out of hand.
The other thing I listened to was Mr. Hannity telling us today that all of us people that, didn't vote for John McCain, because we sat out, suggesting
mm-hmm.
that, elections have consequences and, you have no one to blame. I'm sitting like going, I'm not blaming anybody.
No, me either.
I'm sitting here kind of going, yep, elections have consequences.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yes, they do. And hopefully the right lessons get learned from those consequences.
That's right. You know,
yep.
If you're going to hit your finger with a hammer, you're going to have to feel some pain.
Yeah, that's right. I have a friend of mine that routinely says, I hope all of the people that voted for Obama get exactly what they voted for.
Oh, yeah, I'm hoping that too.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I am really, truly hoping it there because I'm pretty much convinced that I'm not convinced that it has to happen this way. You know, Obama is either going to be a Bill Clinton type president and lead from the center, which is going to piss off his base end.
Yep.
And which will, he will be fought tooth and nail in Congress. Because Pelosi and Reid will just absolutely be beside themselves.
Yep, absolutely.
And Republicans really, really, really at that point need to shut up.
Oh, yeah.
And just let it happen.
Yep.
Or he's going to govern from the left and appease his base and make Pelosi and Reid really happy. And in 2.5 years, he will announce that he will not be running for re-election because so much will have gone into the crapper that there will be no one in the planet looking to keep him there.
Yeah. Actually, I think my biggest fear in terms of Obama is that he turns out to be Carter worse. And he certainly has the potential to have that happen.
You know, in the good old days, there was a certain amount of genteel behavior, despite all the backroom stabbings and poisonings and everything else that were going on.
Yep.
And you could be pretty much count on the fact that no matter how bad the Soviet Union was, it kept its worst behaving people under tight control.
Yes, they did.
There's no such control now. And I don't think bad behavior on our part, in other words, doing stupid things socialistic, is going to get dragged out for a long period of time. I think bad behavior on Obama's part is going to result in relatively quick responses. So Carter's big mistakes have taken 10, 15, 20 years. You know, we can look at Palestine and Iran and look back and see where it started with Carter.
Yes.
But it's taken 20 years to really get bad because of those things.
Yes.
And so people could look at Carter for years and kind of go, well, he was an idiot, but he didn't do any real lasting damage. Well, the lasting damage took a long time to be seen.
Yes, it did.
So Carter could get away with it for a while. I don't think that's going to happen with Obama. I think he screw up now, and 2 months from now, the consequences are going to come back and bite him. We're not going to have to wait 20 years to see how much he screwed up. We're going to see it pretty quick.
That could be
true. We're going to see it in the economy. We're going to see it in the Middle East. You know, he closed Gitmo and pulled troops out of the Middle East, and that thing is just going to explode.
Well, interestingly enough, that's another thing that he just backtracked just in the last couple of days. His transition spokespeople are saying that they are going to abide by the SOFU agreement with Iraq. Now, you will recall that Barack Obama, as a senator, introduced legislation to immediately pull troops out in a 90-day period. That's back when one of the 143 days that he was actually acted as senator. His campaign said he was going to responsibly withdraw the troops in Iraq, leaving a token force to help them with administration, etc. Today, or just in the last couple of days, he says they're going to abide by the SOFU agreement, which means that those troops are going to be there until 2012 minimum.
I don't know. You know, at this particular point in time, I don't trust him.
Me either.
I don't trust that what he says he's going to do, he's going to do.
Yep. Whoops. I don't know what that was, but it was loud.
That was Rick.
Uh-huh.
A little noisy again. I don't know which way he's going to go. And I think anybody that suggests that they know which way he's going to go is strictly a guess at this
mm-hmm.
point. He could easily do significant damage in his first couple of days, and it will throw everybody off. And then, frankly, next Tuesday night, while everyone else is partying like it's 1999, you know, he might be in the Oval Office, you know, writing all kinds of interesting things.
Yes, he could.
We'll see soon enough.
Unfortunately. But yes, we will. Because elections do have consequences.
Elections have consequences.
Yes, they do.
We have only a couple minutes left. We have about 6-7 minutes left.
Okay.
And I want to take 2 minutes, and I want to give you some time.
Okay.
I want to take 2 minutes and ask if you got a chance to see the Golden Globes over the weekend.
I specifically did not watch them.
Well, I wish I could have done the same.
Okay.
Victoria is a big fan of the award show.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I sat and was online while she was watching.
Mm-hmm.
But I did happen to notice that one of my favorite actors did get the Golden Globe.
Uh-huh.
And he did it for something that should be relatively near and dear to our hearts. And that was John Adams got a whole bunch of Golden Globes.
Oh, boy.
And now I really want to see that series because I didn't get a chance to see it.
And I didn't either.
It's available on DVD. Guess what I'm buying?
Mm-hmm. Amazon.com. Here we come.
Actually, I'm going to go find out if the book that it's based on is available at our nearest half-price bookstore. So that's
uh-huh.
my first thing. I'm going to go read the book.
You might try looking for John and Abigail Adams, which is a semi-historical, it's actually fiction, but it's semi-historical in terms of what was happening. It's only semi-historical because there's a lot of conversation that's imputed to both John and Abigail that may or may not have happened. I read it a number of years ago and was highly impressed.
It's something that I want to follow up on. So,
yep.
We got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Bill?
Actually, kind of a revisit of something that you just brought up just a couple of minutes ago, and that is the possibility of consequences of actions by a president that will not have the luxury of having a lot of time pass before those consequences arrive. And as you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, you know, before we had basically the two major superpowers, and everybody understood that nobody wanted the button pressed, that yes, we were in conflict, and yes, we were going to do the things that we thought we needed to do to make sure that our system won. But everybody knew that there was a line you didn't cross. We have major non-state actors on the scene now that we did not have then, or at least they were not in the positions that they are today. We have what are basically feudal states that not only have interests that are inimical to us, but they have nuclear capability. We have another feudal state.
Uh-oh. We lost Bill. Ah! What happened to you, Bill? We'll wait for 5 seconds and see if...
We're going to California! We're going to California and Texas and New York! And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan! And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House! Yeah!
Poor Bill. I hope he even recognizes the fact that he went off.
Maybe not.
He was saying something dangerous. Oh, wait a second. We're not FCC monitored. So I guess they couldn't just bounce him off the air because he was saying something dangerous. Well, I'm going to have to finish the 2 minutes up without Bill. I would like to hope that Barack Obama will govern more as a president for everybody than a president for the left. But I don't trust him.
Nope.
I think he's going to appease his base. He's going to work with Pelosi. And Bill gets 1 minute and 10 seconds.
That's highly embarrassing. I'm talking away and my phone has gone dead. In any event, I don't know where it was that I got cut off, but there are some real danger spots that are ahead of us. And I guess just to round out, I'd like to once again give a shout-out to my conservative talk folks and say thanks for listening. Thank you, the rest of the listening audience, for tuning in. We hope that we have educated you somewhat today. And it's back to you, Tracy.
Well, I think the wholesale capitulation of the rhinos to Barack Obama has given him everything that he wants. He's going to get probably all of his cabinet positions, except for probably Holder, which is probably a good thing.
Yep.
But it looks like he's going to get pretty much what he wants, and he's going to get $350 billion to spend day one.
Yep.
Elections have consequences, and ladies and gentlemen, we are about to get a good taste of what those consequences are.
Absolutely.
Frankly, for the 54% that voted for Obama, I don't think you're going to be happy a year from now. unfortunately, that means I'm not going to be happy.
That's right.
Bill, have a good evening. Rick, thanks for joining us. See you next
Pleasure.
Week.
Pleasure.
Night, Tracy. Night, Rick.
Good night.
We're done, guys.
All right.
Talk to you later, Rick. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, bye.